Welcome to Agent Lab Journal Podcast, a show about practical artificial intelligence, AI agents, and automation. This is the episode for the week of July 27 through August 2, 2026.
Glad to be here.
You know, you can take the absolute smartest AI model in the world today. I mean, one that can write award-winning poetry, generate incredible code, ace the bar exam, all of that.
The benchmark champions.
Right. And you can watch that exact same genius model completely crash your entire company's database simply because a user changed their mind about a restaurant reservation mid-sentence.
It happens all the time.
It really does. So today we are welcoming you to a new deep dive where we are moving past the hype. We're looking past the raw intelligence of these models and looking at the actual plumbing required to make autonomous systems work.
Because in the real world, honestly, an AI that sounds incredibly smart but, you know, forgets to close a single bracket on an API call that is a massive liability. It's not a tool at that point.
Yeah, it's the difference between a parlor trick and an actual production system. So as we dive into this week's sources, we're looking at the mechanics of building, feeding, and securing AI agents.
And when you look at those mechanics, you quickly realize that the text generation part, the part everyone geeks out over, is just the tip of the iceberg. The real challenge for you, for anyone building these, is safely executing complex multi-step workflows and doing it without burning through your entire budget or, worse, compromising your whole security posture.
Absolutely. And I think that starts with the engine, right? The brain of the operation. So let's talk about how we actually test the models powering these systems.
Yeah, let's get into it.
I want to look specifically at some workload tests done on the Solar Open 2 model. This is a massive mixture of experts model. And whenever these huge models drop, the very first thing you see on social media is the marketing claim. It's always like, hey, look, it can be quantized to fit onto two GPUs.
Right. Which, for anyone unfamiliar, quantization is basically a compression technique. You're taking the highly precise mathematical weights that make up the AI model and you're rounding them down so they just take up less space.
Right, right.
And yeah, it is a fantastic marketing claim. But the sources point out a pretty harsh reality here. Just because a compressed model technically fits into your video RAM on the graphics card,
which is where it has to live to run efficiently.
Yeah, exactly. Just because it fits while sitting there doing nothing
doesn't
mean it's actually useful as an autonomous agent.
Wait, why is that? I mean, my instinct is just, if it fits, it fits, right?
Because you have to measure VRAM not just when the model is idle, but at the absolute peak of processing a massive long context prompt. The memory usage spikes. But even more importantly, the metrics of how it actually thinks are what matter.
Like speed metrics.
Yeah. We track TTFT, which is time to first token, how long it takes to start responding, and TPOT, which is time per output token, basically how fast it spits out the answer.
Let me jump in there for a second, because I think a lot of people just assume that if a model is a little slow, it's fine. You know, you just wait a few extra seconds for the chat bubble to appear. No big deal.
And if you're just chatting with it on a website, maybe that is true. But an agent operates in a loop, right? It has to make a decision, generate the code to use a tool, wait for that tool's response, observe the result, and then decide what to do next.
Oh, I see. So it compounds.
Exactly. If your time to first token is sluggish, a process that requires, say, 50 internal invisible reasoning steps suddenly takes 20 minutes to complete. And at that point, it becomes completely impractical for any sort of real automation.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense. But what about the reasoning itself? Because I constantly see these needle in a haystack tests on Twitter where they drop a random fact into a massive document and prove the model can pull it out.
Yeah, the needle in a haystack tests are everywhere. But here's the thing that just proves retrieval. It just proves the model has a good memory. A true long context test for an agent needs to be an agentic reasoning test.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning, can the model pull a specific fact from the very beginning of a 100-page log file, combine it with a strict policy constraint buried at the very end of that same file, and then successfully synthesize both of those pieces of information to decide which specific tool it needs to call?
It's like the difference between stuffing a massive V8 engine into a tiny, compact car. Like, sure, you got it to fit under the hood.
Right.
But can you actually steer it in heavy traffic without the whole thing overheating and stalling out?
That's a great way to put it. And when you ask how quantization impacts that specific ability to steer?
Yeah, how does it?
It impacts it dramatically. Think of a highly detailed architectural blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
If you aggressively compress that blueprint into a blurry, pixelated sketch, you can still tell it's a house.
Sure.
And that's totally fine if you just want the AI to write a nice poem about the house. But if you need the AI to actually build the house, you need the precise measurements. Quantization loses that mathematical precision. And in an AI model, that precision is exactly what allows it to output perfectly formatted JSON schemas. If the model forgets to close a single bracket on an API call because its weights were rounded down a little too far, the entire workflow crashes.
Wow. So you really can't just aggressively compress everything without breaking the agent. But at the same time, running these massive, highly capable models at full precision is incredibly expensive computationally. So how do we actually afford to use them in a real-world business?
Well, you route the traffic, you set up a cheap route, which is a faster, smaller model, and a strong route, which is your heavy-hitting, expensive model.
Okay, I have to push back on the common intuition here, because my very first instinct is, just use the cheap model for all the short, simple prompts and save the expensive one for the long, complicated ones.
You're not do that. Seriously, do not build your router by guessing what looks simple or complex based on length. That is the quickest way to destroy your system's efficiency. You have to route based on real data traces from your actual application. Because if you just guess, you fall into the trap of a false cheap routing decision.
A false cheap? Wait, is that like buying a cheap wrench at the discount store that just shatters on the very first bolt you try to turn?
Yes.
And then you're forced to drive all the way back to the hardware store to buy the expensive one anyway?
That is a perfect analogy. Yeah. That is exactly what a false cheap decision looks like in an AI system. Your router looks at a prompt, decides it's short, so it sends it to the cheap model.
Okay.
The cheap model tries to execute the task, but it fails to format the tool call correctly. Your system catches the error, so it automatically retries. The cheap model fails again.
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, the user's just sitting there totally frustrated waiting for a response. Mm-hmm. Eventually, your system's error handling kicks in and escalates the prompt to the strong model to fix the mess.
Oh, wow. So you didn't save any money at all.
Worse than not saving money. You paid for the cheap model's first failure, you paid for the retry, and you still paid to the expensive strong model anyway.
Plus the terrible latency for the user.
Exactly.
So how do you actually avoid that? How do you know when to use which model without just guessing?
You calculate the true cost of an operation, and that has to include the cost of failure. Routing isn't about asking a system to evaluate abstract intellectual complexity. It's about predicting a very specific mechanical event. You're basically asking, will this cheap model pass the strict schema and policy validations for this specific task?
And how do you test that safely?
Use a shadow mode.
A shadow mode? What is that?
It's where you let your router make predictions on live traffic, but you don't actually let it switch the models yet. You just record what it would have done, and then you compare it to the actual outcome.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, and once the router proves it can accurately predict whether the cheap model will succeed or fail, then you turn it on for real.
Okay, so we've got our engine tested. We understand the limits of quantization. We're routing traffic smartly to avoid those false cheat cascades. But even with a perfect router, a heavy-hitting model is completely useless if you choke its context window with garbage data.
Exactly. Which brings us to how we actually feed data into these systems. Specifically, we should look at GraphRAG.
Right, GraphRAG, which is retrieval augmented generation using knowledge graphs. And just to clarify, instead of just searching for raw text chunks, a knowledge graph connects entities. It maps out how, you know, a person is connected to an organization, which is then connected to a location. But wait, what do you mean by garbage data? We're talking about factual data, right?
I don't mean the facts themselves are garbage. I mean the formatting is garbage. When you pull a subgraph of data to feed into your model, the serialization format, literally how you translate that visual web of connections into plain text, is critical.
Oh, I see.
Because if you just send a standard, fully formatted JSON graph, you are wasting massive amounts of your token budget on pure syntax.
Just to visualize this for the listener, a standard JSON format would be something like, open curly bracket, quote mark, the word source, end quote, colon, quote mark, node A, end quote. Over and over and over again.
Yes. Endlessly repeating keys, brackets, end quotes. It completely crowds out the actual useful information in the context window.
Right.
Your AI is spending all its processing power just reading brackets instead of reading the facts. So you have to look at alternatives.
Yeah.
Things like JSON, where it's just one object per line, or tabular formats like CSV or TSV, which strip out the keys entirely and just use commas or tabs.
And the sources mention an even more extreme version, right? Domain-specific languages or DSL.
Right. This is where you compress the data into highly compact codes.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you define a node with just an at symbol and a relationship with a greater than arrow.
There's actually a great example in the reading of why this matters with a multi-hop reasoning test. The model is asked, which city houses the organization that developed the method used by Irina's project?
That's a tough one.
Yeah. To answer that, the model has to correctly hop from the entity Irina to the Orion project to the specific graph method to the vector organization and finally arrive at the answer, which is Kazan.
And the serialization format completely dictates how well the model can make those logical hops.
But I have to challenge this hyper-optimization for a second.
Go ahead.
If we compress the data into a super dense DSL code, something like, you know, P7R3Millows2, aren't we basically just forcing the AI to learn a completely new, obscure language just to read a simple map?
That is exactly the trade-off. If you compress it too much just to save tokens, the model has to constantly refer back to a legend in the prompt just to decode what R3 actually means. You might save money on tokens, but you destroy the model's computational attention.
Computational attention. I really like that phrase.
It's crucial.
Yeah.
Because the cognitive load of decoding the weird language breaks its ability to actually reason through the graph. It gets so bogged down translating P7 into Irina that it completely forgets it's supposed to be looking for a city.
Wow.
So it's a delicate balancing act. You have to remove the syntax bloat without making the data totally unreadable.
Okay, so let's summarize where we are. We've optimized the model, we've controlled the cost with a shadow-tested router, we've formatted the data perfectly to preserve that computational attention. But what happens when this perfect, rigid system meets a chaotic human?
It's always the humans.
Right, because humans change their minds halfway through a task.
The mid-dialogue shift. This is really where agent architectures live or die. These mid-flight changes generally fall into three types. First, you have the reveal. This is when a user adds a crucial fact later on. Imagine you've asked an AI to plan a dinner menu, it goes off to work, and then you suddenly say, oh, by the way, one participant has a nut allergy.
Right. And second is the revision. So changing a parameter midstream, like, actually change that hotel booking from 12 people down to 6 people. And then the third is the function switch, which is changing the entire goal. Like, actually don't book the hotel at all, just compare the two cheapest options.
Exactly. And how the agent's memory is structured determines if it survives these shifts. If you just feed an agent a raw chat history, literally just a transcript of everything you've said, it will fail.
It's like a waiter at a restaurant, right? You order a steak. 5 minutes later, you call the waiter back and say, actually, I've changed my mind. I want the chicken. But because the waiter didn't explicitly pull out an eraser and delete the steak from his notepad, he just walks into the kitchen and orders both dishes.
That is exactly what happens. In a structured state memory architecture, though, the system is designed differently. The agent must explicitly invalidate and overwrite all data.
So it's proactive.
Right. It has to physically say, delete the variable for 12 people, insert the variable for 6 people, before it is ever allowed to execute any external actions.
Why is that distinction so critical, just for accuracy?
No, because of safety. If an agent relies on raw chat memory, the language model might politely reply to you in the chat interface and say, certainly I have updated your booking to 6 people.
Right, it sounds totally competent.
But the underlying system, which is pulling from the whole messy transcript, might still fire off the actual API tool call with the old incorrect data of 12 people.
So it says the right thing to your face, but executes the wrong thing in the background. That is terrifying.
It really is. And if one single agent doing the wrong thing is bad, imagine an entire automated corporate team of them.
Oof. Which transitions us perfectly into multi-agent systems. If one agent struggles to keep its rules straight when a user changes their mind, what happens when that parent agent starts delegating tasks to sub-agents?
This brings us to a framework called FROST, which manages multi-agent security. And the core principle here is strict security governance and rule inheritance.
Right. So if a parent agent, let's just call it a report manager, delegates a task to a child agent, like a formatter, the child absolutely cannot bypass the parent's restrictions.
Right.
The example given in the sources is really clear. If the parent's memory dictates that the data retention policy is 30 days and external uploads are strictly marked as false, the child agent cannot magically grant itself permission to upload those files to an external server, even if it thinks it would be helpful.
Furthermore, the validation of these standard operating procedures, or SOPs, has to happen entirely before step one is executed.
What do you mean by that, entirely before?
Let's say the child agent comes up with a three-step plan. Step one, read the private financial files. Step two, summarize them. Step three, upload the summary to a public server. You can't allow the agent to execute steps one and two, and then just hope your system blocks step three. The entire plan must be mathematically validated against the rule inheritance before step one is ever allowed to run.
Hold on, let me play devil's advocate here. Why are we overcomplicating this? Why not just put "do not upload files" in capital letters in the system prompt of the child agent? Problem solved.
Okay, this is perhaps the most important lesson in building AI today. Prompt instructions are not security boundaries. I will say that again, because it is so incredibly critical. Prompts are not security boundaries.
Because the model might just hallucinate, or like prompt injection.
Both. Text instructions in a prompt can easily be overridden by a clever user, or the model might just lose its computational attention, like we talked about earlier, and just forget the rule. Real security requires a deterministic code-based approval gate.
How does a deterministic gate actually work in practice?
Well, it's not AI, it's traditional code. It calculates the mathematical intersection of permissions across the entire agent hierarchy.
Okay.
So if the parent agent has permission A and B, and the child agent is programmed to want permissions B and C, the gate calculates the intersection. The only overlapping permission is B.
Right.
Therefore, the child is physically blocked at the code level from executing C. No matter what its AI brain wants to do or what prompt it was given.
Wow. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You don't ask the AI to police itself. You put it in a rigid box.
Exactly.
And this strict separation of authentication and permissions isn't just for abstract multi-agent frameworks in the cloud. The reading shows this is a critical lesson right now for developers who are setting up AI agents on their own local laptops, specifically when looking at tools like Claude Code in VS Code.
Yes, it is highly relevant to local development. People really need to understand that setting up an agent on your machine safely involves four independent layers.
Four layers?
Yeah. You have the VS Code host itself, the extension running inside it, the terminal CLI, which is the actual binary, doing the work, and finally, the auth and permissions layer.
And the trap so many developers fall into is thinking that just because the chat interface is replying to them, their setup is completely safe and properly configured.
Yeah, they confuse authentication with authorization. Authentication just means you are logged in. It means the system knows who you are. Authorization means what files the agent is actually allowed to write to, read from, or delete.
So being logged in does not mean the agent is safely contained.
Not at all.
So how do you verify it's contained? The guide recommends that developers use a totally empty project folder first, right? You test read access using a synthetic marker.
Right. You drop a file on the folder with a random, highly specific string of text, something like Orange Bridge 27. You ask the agent to find it. If it finds it, you know, read access works. Then you test write access.
Right.
You ask it to create a file to make absolutely sure the agent hits an actual approval gate prompting you for permission before it modifies anything on your hard drive. You even test boundary limits. You ask it to read a file outside that specific folder to ensure it gets blocked.
Let me play the impatient developer for a second here. I'm busy. I've got deadlines. If I'm logged in and the agent successfully answers my coding question in the chat window, aren't we good to go? Why do I need to waste time hiding Orange Bridge 27 in an empty folder?
Because the ability of that extension to output safe, helpful chat text on your screen tells you absolutely nothing about whether the CLI binary running silently in the background has been accidentally granted permission to delete your entire source code repository.
Ouch.
Verification over trust. Always. You verify the boundaries mechanically before you trust the AI.
Verification over trust. I love that. Okay, so we've spent a lot of time on enterprise security, massive models, routing, and developer guardrails. Let's shift gears and end with something really tangible, a practical example of what you can build when you have full control over your environment and your automation rules.
Yes. There is a fascinating automated workflow in the sources this week. It takes a messy folder of 186 scattered travel photos and autonomously turns them into a single offline HTML travel story.
It's such a cool project. It uses Python to extract the ESIF metadata, you know, the hidden data attached to the photo file that contains the time it was taken and the GPS coordinates. It uses that data to automatically calculate chronological chapters for the trip, but it doesn't just blindly trust the data.
No, it validates it mathematically. It uses the Haversine formula.
Okay, stop right there. What is the Haversine formula?
It's basically an equation that calculates the great circle distance between two points on a sphere. The script uses this to check the physical distance between consecutive photos. And this is how it weeds out impossible GPS glitches.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if the metadata on photo A says you were in New York, and the metadata on photo B, taken 60 seconds later, says you were in Tokyo, the Haversine formula proves that you would have had to travel 5,000 miles in a minute. The code knows that's physically impossible, so it flags the GPS data point as a glitch and ignores it.
That is brilliant, and the way it renders the final product is also fascinating. It draws the travel map using SVG lines, which is just scalable vector math, but it compresses the actual images using Base64 data URIs.
Which is the secret to why this whole thing works completely offline.
Right. Can you explain how an image exists without an actual image file?
Normally, an HTML website just contains a link pointing to an image file saved somewhere on a server or hard drive. If you lose connection to that drive, the image breaks. You get that little broken image icon.
Right, we've all seen that.
Base64 encoding takes the actual pixels of the image and translates them into a massive, dense string of text characters. The script then bakes that giant block of text directly into the HTML code itself.
So the web page literally is the photo.
Exactly. The final HTML file requires zero internet access, zero external mapping APIs, and zero separate image files to display your entire trip.
That's incredible.
Though there's a serious privacy warning here. Because it pulls raw GPS coordinates, it can easily reveal your home address where the trip started or ended. You absolutely must scrub those sensitive starting and ending points before sharing that HTML file with anyone.
Good tip. Okay, but I have to ask. Why go through all this coding and mapping effort? My smartphone's cloud photo app already makes those little travel montage videos for me automatically. It adds background music, it does transitions, and it takes me zero effort.
It really comes down to autonomy and longevity. When you use the smartphone's auto-generator, you are feeding your personal location data, your habits, and your memories into a tech giant server. You don't own the algorithm, you don't control the privacy, and if they change their app tomorrow, your video might just disappear.
That's very true.
With this script, everything is processed locally on your machine. You own the code. Plus, you get a digital artifact, a single plain text HTML file that will still open perfectly in any web browser 50 years from now, completely offline. You are building a permanent foundation that you control.
You control the foundation. That brings us right back to where we started. Today's deep dive really highlights that journey. We started with the raw, unbridled power of massive AI models, and we realized that to make them actually useful, we had to build the rigid, deterministic plumbing around them.
It challenges you to look at your own workflows, really. Are you relying on a polite chat prompt to protect your data, or do you have deterministic mathematical security gates? Are you just optimizing for a shiny output, or are you verifying the unseen boundaries?
It's definitely something for you to mull over this week. As you watch the hype around new AI capabilities continue to skyrocket, ask yourself, are we just training these models to sound smart, or are we building the rigid mechanical environments necessary to make them safe and autonomous? Thank you for listening. More material is available at agentlabjournal.online. Our team helps build AI agents, automate processes, and connect AI to real-work tools. We invite you to visit the site and contact our team.